sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of the father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out, go back to my father, and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.'" So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the elder son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The elder brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so that I could go and celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found."
Parents decided that in order to teach him a lesson, they would stop, chuck him out of the car, and drive off as if they were leaving him behind, intending to turn around and come back and pick him up 5 minutes later. So they did that, put Tanuka out of the car, drove down the road, came back a few minutes later, and he was gone. He disappeared into a bear-infested forest in Hokkaido in Japan, and he was subsequently lost for 6 days. He was eventually discovered by the Japanese army, apparently quite relaxed and not too upset. He survived by finding a little hut and drinking water out of the tap and so on. His father, subsequently, as you can imagine, has had to ask publicly for his son's forgiveness. And now, whilst those of us who are parents might have some sympathy with the parents for having to try and discipline Yamato, I think we'd agree they went too far, and I think we'd agree that sympathy for the son was indeed called for. I mention that because it's, of course, a story, in one sense, of a lost son. But it's rather different to the story we've looked at this morning in several ways. It's pretty much the reverse, in fact, if you think about it, isn't it? The son in the story that we had read to us this morning by Vicky, he demands a share of his dad's will. He wants freedom from his father. He wants to be away from his father. And his father doesn't want him to leave. And that's where we start this morning. At the opposite to the story of Yamato, whose parents threw him out of the car, and whose parents wanted to get him out of the car, and Yamato didn't want to be away from home. It's the reverse of the story we're looking at this morning. A son who wants freedom from his father. I've got 4 points this morning. I think the slides might be playing up, so if you don't see them up there, I'll tell you what they are. And the first one is this, that the story this morning speaks of a son who wants his freedom. Unlike Imato, who didn't want his freedom, this son in the story this morning wants his freedom. And that's why our sympathies are very much with the dad. And that's the idea. That's why Jesus told this parable. He wants our sympathies to be with dad in this story. The son clearly represents someone who's obviously sinful. If you look at the start of Luke 15, which is where we had the passage read from, we read this. The tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." The Pharisees, you see, were upset about the fact that Jesus was accepting, was welcoming sinners. So he was welcoming tax collectors, collaborators. He was welcoming prostitutes. He was welcoming those who didn't regularly go to synagogue and didn't go to the temple and do all the good things that good Jews should do. He was welcoming these sinners, and the Pharisees were upset about it. And Jesus, amongst other things in this parable, this made-up story to tell a point, to prove a point, he's saying to them, "You are missing the point, Pharisees. You're missing the point, traditional religious Jews, because you're all sinners and you all need God. You all need the Father. And that's why I'm welcoming these obvious sinners." The religious elite disapproved of him welcoming sinners, but that was the whole point. And so Jesus had something powerful, something offensive to say to them. He was saying to them, and they got the point by the end. He was saying to the Pharisees and the religious elite, "You're like the older brother at the end of this story, who's tut-tutting because the lost son has been welcomed home. You're just as messed up and as lost as him. But you think you're good enough to earn God's favour. You got it wrong." And so he tells the story of this younger son, the lost son. And this is the bit I wanted to emphasise this morning, that Jesus is saying to the crowd who are listening to him, we are all lost sons by nature. If Jesus was here this morning, and he is here this morning, by his Spirit, as he speaks to us through his word, he would say to us, we're all lost sons, and so we all need to see the Father's heart towards us, and that the Father wants us to come home. But first of all, we need to understand that this is a lost son who wants and thinks he has a life of freedom. This son is lost, Jesus is saying, but he thinks at the start of the story, he's free. He wants his freedom. He wants to be away from home. He wants to be away from dad. He wants to be away from the family rules and having to do things the family's way. He wants his freedom and to be away from control. He wants to be able to spend his money and his time and his life in his way. He wants to make his own rules. And that's us. And you might be sat here this morning thinking, no, that's not me. I follow society's rules. I follow the laws of the land, and I'm happy to do that. I'm not like this lost son. But you know what? Even though we do follow society's rules and society's laws, usually because we're scared of being caught, what we don't do is live God's way. We don't follow God's laws and God's rules. We don't want to, because we want to live life our way. And that can be great for a while. Yeah, I'm a pastor of a church, and I'm saying it in church. Living our way and not following God's rules can be great for a while. Look at verse 13 of chapter 15. He set off for a distant country and there squandered his wealth in wild living. And wild living can be pretty fun. You know, the lost son who's insultingly asked his father for his share of the estate. In other words, he said to his father, "I want my bit of the will before you're dead. I wish you were dead." This lost son asked for the money and went off and did his own thing. And he did the stuff he did because he enjoyed it, because it was fun. He didn't sleep with prostitutes because it was boring. He slept with prostitutes because he enjoyed it. This was doing life his way. And it was great. It was fantastic for a while. But he soon gets a different perspective. So we've seen the fact that this is a life of freedom the son wants. The second thing we see this is the dawning realization that creeps into his mind and heart as he's living this great life of freedom. We read in verses 14 to 16, after he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country. And he began to be in need. That's an understatement in English. He began to starve.
So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. So verses 14 to 16, he's starting to realize the state he's in. Of course, he was in just as much of a state in verse 13, but he didn't realize it. He was loving life in verse 13. But what we see from Jesus' perspective is he was already in a mess. The difference is, verses 14 to 16, he's starting to realize the mess he's in, as his life of freedom begins to disintegrate and fall about his ears. He has to get a humiliating job, and this really was a humiliating job. I don't know what you think of when you think of humiliating job, or horrible job, or job that'll be at the bottom of your list. Might be cleaning toilets, I don't know, but it's a very, very important job to do, isn't it? But I wouldn't want to do it particularly, and maybe you wouldn't either. This is far worse than that. These were good Jews that Jesus was speaking to, religious Jews who kept the rules. And pigs were unclean animals. You didn't eat them, you didn't touch them, you didn't go near them, or you were made unclean. The lost son has to get a job because he's starving and his life's falling apart, a job feeding pigs. It was the lowest of it's as low as a Jew could go. And not only that, he's so hungry, he wants to eat the half-rotten pods that the pigs are eating. That's the state he's in. And Jesus is saying to the Pharisees and the religious VIPs of his day, and he is saying to us this morning, yes, you lot at the back dressed nicely as well, come to church every Sunday, to me too. He's saying, we are all spiritually like this. By nature, we're like this. We are a million miles away from the God who has made us. We're a million miles away from home. See, God made us to... put it this way, we're from God and we're like God and we're for God. I've heard it said that way before. We're from God in the sense he made us, and that's why we're here. We're like God because unlike all the other animals, we are made in God's image. We reflect him in a way the animals don't. And we're for God. We were made by God to live for him and to please him and to give him glory and to give him praise. That's how we were made, and that's not how we live. We are by nature a million miles away from God. We are lost. We are empty. We are spiritually, Jesus is saying to us all, in a desperate state. Miles from home and close to death. Just like Yamato Tanaka was, or like his parents thought he was. Away from home, in danger and close to death. Everyone deep down at least senses something of this. You might be sitting there saying, no, that's not me. Yes, it is, God says to us in his word. Yeah, I don't feel that. But actually, I think if you really think about it, if you dare to pray about it and talk to God about it, you will start to see this is you, because it's every single one of us. Because this life isn't it. We got 70 years, 70 years, maybe a bit extra these days in this country. That's not it. After that, after death, after those years, there is eternity. And we will all exist for eternity, either with God or away from God. And by nature, we're all in a desperate state because we don't know and love and have God in our lives. One part of Scripture says that God has put eternity in the heart of man, in the heart of mankind. We all know this deep down, that we're lost and we're in a state. We have the knowledge of God in us. There is a gnawing homelessness and hopelessness when we are away from God. There's a desperate search for belonging. We all want to belong, don't we? We all want to belong. But the reality is no earthly family, no earthly club, no earthly gang, no earthly group of friends or set of possessions can meet the longing for belonging that is deep down in our hearts. We are in a desperate state, Jesus says to us, through this parable. He says it to nice religious people, and he says it to people who know they're messed up and their life's in a mess. To all of us, he says, we're in a desperate state. We're not right in our relationship with an awesome and wonderful and holy God. This is us, Jesus says. You're like the lost son. You've blown it. It might be obvious you've blown it because your life's in a real mess and everybody can see it. Or it might be you've got a fantastic family and a fantastic career and a great car and life's just great. You've blown it too. I've blown it too. we're like this lost son. Now, at this point in the story, maybe, like me, maybe I hope it's not just me, you're looking at this lost son and your sympathy is actually beginning to stir for him. If you'd been a good Jew at the start of this story, you would not have had sympathy with the son. Because you do not treat your father this way in that Jewish culture. You do not ask for his money, his will money, before he's dead. It's so insulting. You would have been angry with the son at the start. But by this point, maybe your sympathy is starting to stir. Again, I think that's the point. We know full well he's done it. The son has put himself in this position. It's down to him. We want to say to him, you really did bring this on yourself, but we're starting to feel a bit of sympathy for him too. This is the human condition that Jesus is picturing here. It's not a slight or a temporary thing, it's disaster. So when we see the disaster that this son's life has become, we're meant to see ourselves in it. Because the son knows at this point, he knows, doesn't he? Verses 14 onwards, he's starting to click because he's hungry and all his money's gone and all his friends have gone. He knows he has no resources left, nothing to fall back on. He knows he's got no claim on his father. He can't go back to dad and say, right, you've got to take me back. You know, in our culture today, Western culture, you look after your kids, you give your kids everything. So we kind of want to say, well, if he comes back, really, I know he's been bad, but you should take him back. No, in Jewish culture, he had insulted his father and the family, and that was it. There's nothing left to him, and he's on the verge of death. So maybe we're in the wings now, looking at this son, and what we're shouting at him is, go home, you fool. I know you've messed up. I know you've insulted your father, but there's nothing else left to do. You might as well at least try. Go home. The father doesn't have to take you back, but maybe, just maybe, there's a way, and he will. And then you get to verse 17, and it's as if the son has heard us. So we've seen two things so far. Firstly, the life of so-called freedom of this son. Secondly, the dawning realization in his life that he is in a mess. And thirdly, we start to see, verse 17, the journey home. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am, starving to death. We've got to a potential turning point in the story. Now, I'm not the world's best storyteller. So you've got to imagine you've got Jesus, the world's best storyteller, here in front of you, okay? This insulting, offensive son who's got himself in a mess and he realizes the state he's in, you're on the edge of your seats. You want it, because you haven't, pretend you've never heard the story before. Maybe it was the first time you heard it read this morning. Pretend you've never heard it before. You're thinking at this point in the story, he's come to his senses. What does this mean? What's going to happen next? Literally, the words mean, in the original language, in the original Greek, he came to himself. He realized the state he was in. He'd been in a state back in verse 13. Now, verse 17, he realizes the state he's in. He has proudly cut himself off from home and hope and sustenance and love. And he's in a terrifying place. Have you been there where you've got to that point in life? Maybe you're at that point in life right now. Where you realize just how hugely you've messed up. And what a mess you've got your life into. And you know that horrible feeling where you just start to sweat because you don't see any way out? That's where the sun is at. But we realize as we listen on to Jesus that actually it's wonderful that the sun has got to this point, that he realizes how miserable he is. Maybe this is you this morning. This is actually the point you're at this morning in this place. If that is you, can I just encourage you, don't switch off and keep listening to what Jesus says. And also, don't make the initial mistake that this lost son made. Do you see what he does? What he says? I will set out, verse 18, and go back to my father. Well, that's good. That's good that he's thinking that. The father, of course, stands for God. In case you haven't picked up that obvious point yet in the story, the father stands for God in this story. And the son says, I'll go back to my father. But here's where he starts to go off track a bit. I will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. Well, that's good. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. That's good. Make me like one of your hired servants. There's a bit of bad thinking creeping in to the way the son is looking at this situation now. He's starting to think, maybe if I go back to my father and I'm willing to act as a servant, a slave, I can work my way back into the family and into his favor. He's thinking, maybe I can change my position, earn my way back in. He just can't. That's not the story. That's not what happens here. It's not that the son goes home and makes up for what he's done and gets himself back into the family. And you know this if you know the New Testament and your Bible at all. You can't earn your way into God's favour and into God's family. God wants us home. He wants us to come back to him. But we can't earn our way back into his love, into his favour. We can't do it. So if this is you this morning, you've never come to God, you've never come into his family, or maybe you did years ago and you've wandered away, and you're thinking, can I come back this morning? Don't make the mistake of the lost son and think you can earn your way back. None of us can. But here's the good news. He's got the basic idea right. I will set out and go back, and I will say to my father, Father, I have sinned against God and against you. Now, I'm guessing most of us, if we've been in the crowd that day, we would have been rooting for him to do this very thing. We'd have been saying to him, you're an idiot. You're a fool. And you're an insulting fool at that, the way you've treated your father. But, yes, go home. Go back to your father. The Pharisees, on the other hand, the religious people, in our context, unfortunately, maybe some nice church people, they were probably snorting and saying, sorry, pal, you've blown it. You have transgressed. You've messed up big time. You deserve what's coming when you get back home. You wait. Yeah, go home and see what dad has got to say to you when he kicks you out and gives you what you deserve. And we know, of course, at one level, the religious people, the Pharisees, they were right at one level. The father in this culture had every right to turn him away. God, who the father stands for, has every right. Let's be clear on this. Every right to turn us all away when we come to him. Because we've rebelled against him. He is good and he is loving and he's holy. And we've said we want to live life our way and we don't care about you, God. We've said to God, in effect, all of us, in the way we've lived our lives, I wish you were dead, God. We don't deserve to go back and he doesn't have to accept us. So one level, the Pharisees are right. But here's the bit they've missed, which is why I'm spending my time talking to you about this story this morning. Here's the bit the Pharisees missed. Here's the wonderful bit. Everything, at this point in the story, everything right now hinges on not the son and what he can do, but on how the father will react when he goes home and says, Father, I've blown it. I've messed up. I'm a scumbag. I've messed up. I'm sorry. Everything hinges on how the father will respond. Again, maybe this is you. You're realizing the state you're in. You've never come to God to belong. Or you've wandered away from God and now you're thinking about coming back to God this morning. And you feel the sweat on your neck when you realize how messed up and lost you are. And you're thinking, I need to come back to God. And you're thinking, right. But you're also thinking, how do I come to him? What is God's response going to be if I come to him this morning? Listen up, because this is the whole point of Jesus' story. And it's the bit I want to finish with. My fourth and final point. What we see at the end of the story is the heart of God that the Pharisees didn't grasp. The heart of the Father. So the Pharisees were probably looking forward to this bit in the story, where the son gets his just desserts, because of course the Pharisees are like the older son at the end of the story. They're ready for the Father to act like a judge, and God will judge the earth one day, but they're only half right. Because although God will judge sin, and we're all sinners, Jesus has something stupendous to show them and us about the heart of the Father towards lost sinners who want to come back to God. So, look at Dad. This is the last bit this morning, the last part of the picture. Try and imagine him. So he's even older than me. The son was probably in his teens, late teens. The father might have only been in his 50s, but in that culture that was getting on. So, okay, a bit older than me, grey, he's got a beard. But he's the patriarch, he's important, he owns land, he's got a lot of wealth. He's got long flowing robes which show that he's wealthy and he's important. He's back home on the farm with a respectable, honourable, important, dignified patriarch. These were important characteristics to the Jews. They respected these characteristics. That's the father. What's he doing today? What do you think the father's doing today? Let's say it's day 364. It's nearly a year since the son's gone away. What's he doing today? Something important? Some matter of great importance? I tell you what he's doing. He's at the gate and he's on watch. See, again, try and imagine this the first time you've heard the story. How's the father going to react? How's he going to respond to the lost son when he comes home? And Jesus says he's at the gate doing the same thing he's done every day, every breakfast time, every lunchtime, every dinner time. He's at the gate looking out for his son. He's on watch. And as he's watching, this little dot appears on the horizon. And then the dot becomes this skinny, straggly looking figure. And the father, because he's getting on a bit now, he probably has to squint, and he's squinting, saying, is that him? I've been on the lookout 364 days. It's day 365. Is that him? And as he squints and as he looks, he starts to realize, as it resolves into shape, it is his son. So what do you think the father does? The Jews would have been expecting the father to sit there, dignified, wait for his son to approach, and wait for his son to apologize and plead for forgiveness. What does the father do? He runs. You just didn't do that in that culture. If you were an important man, a patriarchal family, you just didn't run for anything. Possibly, if the house was on fire, you'd run. But otherwise, you didn't run. So this old man, the patriarch, he'd have had to do this. He hitches up his long robes, because he can't run with the robes dragging on the floor, and he sprints towards his son. Now, old guys, and I include myself in this, okay, for the sake of this sermon, old guys, the age of 44 upwards, when they run, and the older they get, start to look a bit funny, don't they, if you're younger. Don't tell my dad I said this, I hope he doesn't listen to this, but, you know, he's still a good, for his age, he's fit and he's a good runner, but I do sometimes smile when I see my dad running, because old guys just look funny when they run. And in this culture, it was even more ridiculous. Ridiculous, the Pharisees would have been thinking at this point. He wouldn't get up and run towards his son. But that's exactly what he does. He gets up and he sprints. And when he gets to him, what does he do? He embraces him. He hugs him. He plasters him with kisses, possibly to the point that the son is saying, all right, Dad, okay, please stop. I've got something important I need to say to you. Stop kissing me. This is how the father in the story reacts. And horror of horror, as far as the Pharisees were concerned, they know that Jesus is telling them this is what God's heart is like towards messed up, ruined sinners who decide they want to come back to God. That's what his heart is like. But the Pharisees were saying, but it's ridiculous. And Jesus is saying to us, yeah, it is ridiculous. Ridiculous, like God sending his only son to live and die in the place of people who rebel against him. Ridiculous, like a perfect man who is also God, dying on a cross to pay for the price of people like you and me. Isn't that ridiculous? It is ridiculous at one level. It's exactly what God has done for us. And exactly the heart of God towards people this morning who want to come home and realize what a mess they're in and flee to God and say, I'm just so sorry. Will you please take me back? I've got nothing to give to you, God, but I'm asking you to take me back anyway. And here's the thing, God can say yes. Even though he's a just and holy God, he can say yes. Why? Because he sent his son, the son, to die in the place of lost sons like us. This is what happens when you come home. So if you're wondering this morning, how do I come home? What do I do? The answer is, run to God now. The answer is, don't try and sort your life out and then come to God. That's not what the son does. When we read he repented, it doesn't mean he sorted his life out. It means he turned around and he said, I'm going back to God. I'm going back to the Father. That's what you do if you realize you've messed up. Because God says to someone whose heart is like that, come home. Come in. Because Jesus, my son, has paid the price. When we say, I have sinned, and we flee to God for the mercy we see in this parable, through the person who told this parable, Jesus, the mercy that's shown here and was shown even more graphically at a place called Calvary on the cross, that mercy is shown to us. And maybe you're thinking, well, what if he rejects me? Well, the answer to that question is, he gave you this parable to show that he won't reject you. What he says to you through this parable this morning is, come home. Leave the pig pods and leave the living in the muck of living a life of freedom, so-called freedom for yourself. Leave that and come back to me. What happens when we come to God through Jesus and we flee back to him? What happens? What does God do? Does he coolly, calmly say, yes, you may come into my family? No. He embraces us, he kisses us, and he throws a party. I'm not being unbiblical here. You don't just get this in the parable of the prodigal son. You get it from the book of Revelation, which talks about a great celebration. You read it in scripture and we hear that there is rejoicing in heaven when one sinner repents. What God does is when we come to him through faith in Jesus and say, I've messed up, I'm sorry, God, is he throws a party. He welcomes us lavishly. And the angels in heaven rejoice. And he rejoices over us with singing. That's what Zephaniah says. And we get a robe. See what happened at the end of the story? The son gets a robe, a glorious robe. You get a robe when you come to faith in Jesus and come back to God. It's the robe of the righteousness of Jesus. Because from now on, when you come to faith in God through Jesus, you are clothed, so to speak, in the goodness and perfection and righteousness of Jesus. That's how God sees you when you flee back to him through faith in Jesus. You get a robe. You get a ring of grace we're going to be singing about in just a minute. A robe and a ring that you don't deserve. We cannot earn our way in. Listen, good, sorted, smart church people, you need to hear this. You cannot earn your way in. You cannot stay in the family by earning credit with God. You just can't do it. You've just got to flee to God and ask for his mercy in Jesus. You can't earn your way in, but when you flee back to him, you're met not with resistance or reluctance, but with an embrace and a joy and a celebration that will last forever. So God says to you this morning, through Jesus, come home, lost son. Come home, lost daughter. I'm waiting. And I want you back.